How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every Sunday by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, also up at WrestlingObserver.com. Every Sunday, as noted, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Got a lot of news to get into today after several slow weeks. Everything seems to be back in action here. And in fact, we've got a lot of stuff that has happened this past week, and we've got a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks, not the least of which is the Tokyo Dome show from Friday night, which a lot of people, at least online at WrestlingObserver.com, had a chance to watch. Many raving, some calling it one of the best shows of all time. We're going to talk to you about that here on the program. Still available on Ustream if you search for it for about another week. It's not going to be up there forever, so if you want to see this show, now is your chance. We'll talk about a lot about that here on this program. Plus, tomorrow is Raw. It is the first big Raw after several weeks of slowdown for Christmas and New Year's. The Rock returns tomorrow. CM Punk faces Ryback in a TLC match. Some sort of big angle is planned, leading to the Royal Rumble as well. All of that taking place tomorrow night. They've actually got packed Raw shows every single Monday through the end of the month. Rock is actually going to be appearing on most WWE programming. And by most WWE programming, I'm not just talking Raw. He's in for significantly more dates than he was last year, meaning he's going to be working Raw shows, he's going to be working pay-per-views, he's going to be working SmackDown, believe it or not. I don't know if we're going to see him on Main Event, but who knows? I'm sure stranger things have happened at some point in the history of the world. But Rock is going to be making a lot of appearances and likely leading to the Rock versus CM Punk match at the Royal Rumble. And where it goes from there, I guess we shall find out over the next several weeks. Is it going to be the Rock versus John Cena at WrestleMania? Is it going to be The Rock versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which of course has been rumored as well? A lot of rumors, and those will all start falling out in the next couple of weeks. So, obviously a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're going to kick it off after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, and 794, XM Radio Channel 208. You can catch us on the TuneIn Radio app by searching for Sports Byline. It's available on most smartphones and worldwide at WrestlingObserver.com. So many different ways to hear the show. And Mike, I know we were going to start talking about the Tokyo Dome here, but I actually have in front of me a tweet from, of all people, Penn Jillette. And he's standing backstage with Kane, an unmasked Kane. Him and Penn Teller and Kane. And Kane is actually taller than Penn Jillette, which I think shocks him. And he's smiling and happy. Obviously, doesn't look anything like the Kane we see on WWE each week. But what is astonishing is that Penn Jillette looks exactly like Joe Park.
That would be great if you could actually get Joe Park there, too. But, yes, I would believe they have the same political values that held. And if you think about it, it actually is very fitting that Penn and Teller are there with him because his career in a lot of ways with what he's been saddled with and some of the storylines he's had actually really has been really it's magic.
Actually, if you really look at this picture, you've got Joe Park, Isaac Yankum, and Bilbo Baggins all in the same room together. It's astonishing. It's up at Penn Jillette, everybody. At Penn Jillette. Check that out.
Show on Showtime is great, too, which can't say the name of the show on the air, but you know what it is.
Sure. Let's talk about wrestling.
That would be good.
The Tokyo Dome.
That was really good.
Was this the best show you've ever seen?
Yeah, you know, it probably, I went to the Great American Bash in 1989, and I've been to a lot of good shows, but the Bash 89, like, from top to bottom was it really was an excellent show and rose to a crescendo that ended with Ric Flair and Terry Funk. This was another show where it started. It was just a great old-style pro wrestling show with great matches that were not only great in their context, but as far as the matches that they were, a three-way match, a grudge match between an MMA outsider and a pro wrestler, a preeminent IWGP world title match, they were like perfect matches for what they were. I mean, if you ever wanted to say, okay, what would be a great three-way match, show me one, low-key Prince Devitt and Kota Ibushi had that. If you just want to say, give me a great wrestling match to watch, Tanahashi and Okada was that. Give me two veterans that know how to do everything and just are nonstop rivals and who just can't stand each other. Nagata and Suzuki was that. I mean, it was really, it's people are probably going to get sick of hearing all the accolades that are thrown upon this show, especially if they're not Japanese pro wrestling fans. But they're all true. If you're a pro wrestling fan, this was pretty much this is almost exactly what you want out of a pro wrestling show. It built from warming the crowd up and having some matches all the way up into, again, just what was one of the matches of the year already, which is Okada and Tanahashi. But that may have not even been the best match on the show. There were so many good ones.
What was your favorite match?
I really am tied between Yuji Nagata and Minoru Suzuki, and Shinsuke Nakamura and Sakuraba. And again, there were, there's four or five you can actually choose from that were, pretty perfect for what they were on this show. But I think those two really stand out to me. And I know I've been a longtime fan of Yuji Nagata, and I think he's one of the most underrated wrestlers of the last 15 years. And I think people are starting to realize this now, up in the age that he is, and he continues to have these great matches. And he and Minoru Suzuki have been joined at the hip now for quite some time. They play the perfect two grumpy old men who are lifetime rivals who don't like each other. They came from two completely different backgrounds, and they have a great, incredible chemistry with each other. And I think how they reacted during the match, the expressions on their faces, the whole nine yards. It's the most underrated match to me of the show, from how it sounds like people's reactions are. Everybody liked the match, but it's probably third or fourth on most people's lists. It was probably first for me. It really was. I think that was just an excellent pro wrestling match. And Shinsuke Nakamura and Sakuraba was outstanding. I mean, you could not book a MMA outsider coming into a pro wrestling realm. And again, there's lots of different backstory and storylines for a big Japanese pro wrestling fan that made this an exciting, an exciting match. But it also showed Nakamura where he stands right now, because Sakuraba has not been impressing anybody in his pro wrestling return. He was never really a great pro wrestler to begin with. He was an undercard guy in UWFI. In some of the New Japan matches that they had back and forth back in the day, he was not, there was no light shined upon him. And he has not been impressive in singles matches leading into the Dome show, and Nakamura, went with him. And it's not like Sakuraba didn't live up to his end of the deal. He did, but it really showed Nakamura as a performer where he's at right now in the realm of things, and how close he is to Tanahashi as far as being, legitimately one of the best pro wrestlers in the world.
I thought the Sakuraba match was the best match on the show. I thought that match was amazing. Kind of cheating a little bit, actually. To me, it was like, I got to watch that match again. But obviously, a lot of the New Japan guys, I mean, they train shoot style. They grapple in the dojo, right? They train. I mean, you're not going to see all of them go into MMA or anything like that, but they do a lot of shoot style training. Shouldn't even say shoot style. I mean, they grapple. And to me, this was like a match where two guys just decided, we're going to go in there and we're going to just have a grappling match. And they had a finish, and they had a couple of spots in the middle, but the rest of the time they just grappled. And obviously, Sakuraba was going to would have destroyed him, but, you know, he gave him some escapes, he gave him some reversals, he gave him some spots here and there. But it was just, I mean, maybe I'm completely out to lunch, but watching it, it looked like just about the easiest match you could possibly do. And they worked in the pro wrestling style spots at the right time. And the finish was great, which was Sakuraba going for the Kimura, which is, if you watch any Japanese mixed martial arts, any pride, I mean, that was his move. His Kimura, and he went for it and switched to an armbar, and Nakamura reversed in the middle of the armbar and then hit a running knee and pinned him. And it was perfect. It was a perfect match. And I don't know, like, I don't think Nakamura is the only guy that can do a little bit of grappling, but that right there is every match Sakuraba should have. You know, you have a couple of spots planned out, and then you just go in there and you grapple, and Sakuraba gives the guy something here, he gives the guy something there, and you do a couple of cool spots, and then at the end, either Sakuraba submits the guy, or the guy hits him with a move, or whatever, and he beats Sakuraba. I mean, that is exactly how you should use Kazushi Sakuraba. He shouldn't be in there doing pro wrestling, doing wacky pro wrestling moves and everything like that. I mean, some stuff can be worked in, obviously, but I just thought that was like, It was just so different than anything else on the show. I mean, every match on the show was different, but that one there, as I watched it, it was like, and again, I could be completely out to lunch here, but as a grappler, I watched it and I just was like, these guys are just grappling. You know, they're not, I mean, obviously Sakuraba isn't trying to beat him in 15 seconds or anything like that, and maybe he could. But they're just going out there and they're grappling. And when it's time, they've got a couple of spots they're going to do. And they've got a finish. And it was great. It was great. It was almost cheating in the sense that, like, probably so little effort was put into creating the match aside from the big spots. And as opposed to, like, you know, the low-key match, which God only knows how much work was put into that thing. But also an awesome match. Anyway, we're going to talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday. Of course, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check Sirius XM Channel 794 as well. We're up there every week. And TuneIn Radio app. If you download the TuneIn Radio app to your smartphone, you can search for Sports Byline USA. Listen to the show live every Sunday there. And of course, all else fails, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the New Japan Tokyo Dome show, which was outstanding. And obviously, the show is still available up at Ustream. It's $35. If you normally spend $35 on TNA or $54 on WWE, I can tell you that you will not regret your $34, $35 that you spend on this this New Japan iPay-per-view. I have to say that I did a prediction show last week, and somebody predicted that in 2013, New Japan was not only going to move to traditional pay-per-view, but move to live traditional pay-per-view. I think that man is going to end up a fool. But I got to say that I thought the show was just outstanding, but all the talk about the best show that people have ever seen, I mean, maybe it was the best show I've ever seen, but it's hard to say that when you're watching it on your computer. I know that sounds like I'm an old man, but I've been to live WrestleManias year after year after year, and just, you know, you're there, you're in the crowd, people are going just absolutely nuts. You're watching a Shawn Michaels Undertaker main event that's just outstanding, and it's so hard to then watch a show on your computer screen with your headphones on and get anything near that type of atmosphere. And I'm sure if I were in the Tokyo Dome, it would have been like far and away the best show of all time ever. But it's really hard to say that watching it on the computer.
Well, it's one of the catch-22s of it because, the fan base and the ones who are most excited about this and the ones who, looked at those last six matches on this show and are saying that about the show and saying it's, the greatest one they've ever seen is because they're vicariously putting themselves into the Dome, which is, again, it's one of the problems that they're always going to have with trying to promote or promote in the way that they do to North Americans and not having commentary and things like that is the person watching in their fan base knows what's going on. They've been invested in this. They know it's, New Japan's WrestleMania. They know that New Japan's been on a roll for the last few years. So you do have to temper it for anybody out there listening who, now goes and listens to this, who doesn't, watches this, that doesn't necessarily watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. There's going to be things in there that you don't really understand. Now, it's universal. You're going to know, as long as you're a pro wrestling fan, you're going to be able to get into the show. But the people that are touting this as the greatest thing ever are because they've vicariously put themselves into knowing what went into this New Japan show, what was different about it, and the whole nine yards. And on top of it, you can make a claim again that the last six matches, you take your choice, was the, probably the 2013 match of the year already, and it's January whatever it is today, January the 7th. What day is it today?
Today is the 6th.
It is the 6th.
Yeah, you're getting ahead of yourself. The Tanahashi Okada match, awesome match. Tanahashi beat him. Okada, as some of you are aware, if you've read The Observer this week, WWE apparently is interested in Okada. And obviously, nothing against Okada or anything like that, but they're not interested in Tanahashi? Is it a contractual issue, or what's the story here?
Do you remember when there was the picture of he and Jeff Hardy outside WWE headquarters where it said, Jeff Hardy with his biggest fan, not even mentioning Tanahashi's name?
Yeah.
I don't know, although New Japan would not let Tanahashi go without just an absolute war. They would match everything for Tanahashi. I'm not saying they wouldn't for Okada either, but it's just, it's one of those things. I don't know. It would not be good for Okada's career in all likelihood, because when has somebody come up? When has somebody come from Japan and done well in WWE, and not been in a stereotypical role or been, being the role that Okada's in now? They probably wouldn't do that. He's a big guy. He's a, he has presence. He's very young, and I don't know. Again, I don't know why New Japan wouldn't do everything they could to keep Okada, other than they couldn't match the money deal, or maybe Okada actually wants this, would want to come to America, which I don't know why. I would be a little sour on it if I was him in TNA last year. But I don't know, and I don't know what it is with WWE and Tanahashi too, because obviously with how he looks, and the fact that he arguably is the best pro wrestler in the world, I don't know why they wouldn't go after him harder. Although, if you're New Japan, there's no way you give him up.
The match you were talking about in the first segment, Nagata and Minoru Suzuki. I'm a huge Minoru Suzuki fan, and I was thinking about this match. This match was all about these men's faces. Like, that's all it was about. And I was thinking, I wonder if, you put a mask on both men, if this would have been, half the match that it was. And there's part of me that thinks they're so good that it still would have been awesome. They would have found a way to make the masks work. But realistically, without seeing these men's faces, this match would have been, I don't want to say it would have been nothing, but their facials made it. I mean, it was astonishing. It's a match you should show every wrestler coming up ever for the rest of time. When you explain, I've been to wrestling school a million times, helping people, and Buddy Wayne has a school. I used to go out there all the time, and man, you try and teach people wrestling, and everyone can do the moves right off the bat. Shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people. You watch enough wrestling, you can do some moves. You can do a vertical suplex with, probably never having been shown anything in your life. You've seen it so many times on television. But you see these guys doing their early matches, and it's like they're zombies out there doing these matches. They have no facial expressions whatsoever. Their expression never changes. You never feel anything as a result. And it's difficult to explain this to guys. And this is the match that you just say, all right, hold on a second. Stop. Let's watch this match, and then let's try again. And I think that that you would dramatically improve every professional wrestler who had a chance to watch this match. This is what wrestling is in a lot of ways. At least one style of wrestling. Obviously, you know, you're still going to get facials and that sort of thing in a junior like the three way on the show with Loki, Agent 47. But in a match like this, you know, you get a hell of a lot more out of a hell of a lot less if you can drag people into your match because they understand what you feel and how angry you are or how cocky you are just by looking at your face. That's what this match was all about. It was the best. It was so awesome.
Well, that's where I, you know, can, as long as Suzuki can stick out his tongue and Nagata's eyes can be seen in a mask when he rolls him back to do the armbar, you know, they could wear a mask. It doesn't matter. A part of it is the fact that people are so invested in both of these guys, and they're just two damn good old-school professional wrestlers in different ways. And Suzuki, believe me, was not always this way, and Nagata was not always looked at this way. And it was, again, with the faces, with the moves that they did, you know, they did beat the hell out of each other. I mean, it is Suzuki and Nagata, so slaps and chops and all that, they were used, but it's when to do those things. And again, they just took the crowd who, again, the typical Japanese wrestling crowd doesn't, you know, respond to much throughout the matches. Over the last few years, it's gotten more and more. It's not exactly an American crowd, but it's increased a little bit. But Sakuraba, you know, his comeback has kept people into the match and kept them vocal. And I think, you know, outside of that one, this was the match where people were the most vocal in because they have got so much invested in those guys. And they did draw them in right away early, and they went out to have, you know, just another chapter in a great series of matches together. I just thought it was, you know, kind of like basically you were saying why I liked it so much was it's kind of the epitome of just a great old-school wrestling match.
You know who else I was really impressed with, of all people, was, and this is looking at it through the eyes of someone who used to wrestle quite a bit, is Muto.
Yes.
This dude can't move. And the funny thing is he hasn't been able to move for like a decade, you know. But for those of you that haven't seen Muto of late, meaning, like, in the last 20 years, the last you saw of him was when he had long hair and face paint in NWA and WCW. He's old. He's bald. He's got a white goatee. He looks kind of like a jacked-up Mr. Miyagi.
Tan as hell.
Tan, yeah. He's got his legs are taped up so tight that, you know, he's probably has no feeling in his feet. But he hobbles around the ring like he's on stilts, like the great Kali. But my God, that guy can work because it's fake. So if you can figure out
Brian, it's image too. Sorry to cut you off, but he's still all those things you said about him. He was still the coolest looking old man you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, and obviously because it's fake. If you can find a way to believably work a match, then more power to you. And he has figured out how to do that. Now, granted, he did about 9 too many Shining Wizards in this match here. But still, I mean, he can work. He worked great on this show. And it wasn't the best match or anything like that. I think most people probably even listed in their top 8 or something like that. But still, there's another match. You show this to the young guys. Go, look, this dude can't move. Look at how good he is. Learn a lesson from this. So, anyway, we got to head to a break again. But back in just a moment with more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday. 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are also available Sirius XM Channel 794, your TuneIn radio app on your smartphone. Download it, search for Sports Byline USA. You can not only hear the show live, but you can always check out the archive of past Wrestling Observer Live programming and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Show is also available at WrestlingObserver.com after it ends its live airing. You can head over there and download the show for free. Check it out. And, of course, if you want more, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily radio shows, sometimes as many as 5 shows in a single day, covering every single aspect of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. U.S. pro wrestling, international pro wrestling. If you're enjoying the Tokyo Dome talk, Mike Sempervivi, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, talks tons of Japanese pro wrestling, as does our buddy Alan on Dr. Keith Presents. History of Wrestling with Carl Stern, Mixed Martial Arts, Mike Coughlin, Doc Young, Les Thatcher. I shouldn't say Doc Young, he's not back to the show yet, but he will be soon.
Vic Sosa.
That's right, Vic Sosa. We got so many great shows, so head over there and check that out. There's literally thousands and thousands of hours of audio in the archives, and it's only $10.99 a month. So you pay your $10.99, you get 30 days of access to absolutely everything. And after 30 days, I suspect, I cannot confirm, but I suspect you will sign up for another 30 days into infinity. So check it out. If you love this show, I guarantee you that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking the New Japan Tokyo Dome event, which is currently still available on Ustream. $35, but best $35 you'll spend so far this year. It is only January 6th, but still, maybe the best $35 you spend all year. The three-way, a three-way championship match for the Intercontinental, IWGP Junior title, I'm sorry. IWGP Junior title is Prince Devitt, Loki, and Kota Ibushi. And it was a fantastic match. The thing people talk about more than anything else is Loki working as a, I believe, a video game character, Agent 47. But he wrestled in a suit and tie and did a Loki match in the suit and tie, which made for, it's the kind of thing you only see on a WrestleMania level show. And it worked perfectly here on this show. And just an amazing three-way match. And Prince Devitt ended up retaining the title. And now he will be, I believe, defending it. I'm not sure against who. I believe it's La Sombra. But he's got a championship coming up for the Fantastic Mania event. Mike can tell you more about that. But a great match!
Oh, my God, yeah. Absolutely it was. Actually, Sombra's facing Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. It's going to be Devitt, and I think mostly tag matches, I believe. But I think Dragon Rojo Jr. is going to be one of his singles. But I'm not a big Kota Ibushi fan in that I think he's been a little bit overrated. I mean, he's very exciting, incredibly athletic. He's a smaller guy that's made his bones in DDT, him and Kenny Omega, especially a couple of years ago. But to me, he's very out of control. He does a lot of things like, you know, backflip soccer kicks to knock the guy off the top rope and double moonsaults where he moonsaults off the top and lands on his feet and then does another moonsault. It's occasionally, because of how he has to do these moves, he's very sloppy and he's gotten a lot better, but to me, he's not a great flyer. Somebody like a Prince Devitt is, and Loki, I'm not the biggest fan of the world of either. And with that said, when you look at this match, if I had to watch a three-way match, this was about perfect. You know, Loki was not over the top with anything that he did, was not too stiff or anything like that. It was just the right amount of Loki and the right amount of Ibushi together with Prince Devitt, who, you know, is one of the more underrated guys in the world. I think a lot of people who know, you know, look at him as being one of the best wrestlers in the world, you know, pound for pound, and push for push. But, you know, outside of that realm, a lot of people don't know him. He is absolutely excellent. And this was, again, it's not like New Japan does gimmick matches a whole lot. They don't have three ways for major championships on their biggest show of the year, but they did here, and it paid off incredibly well. Again, It was, if you had to say, give me a three-way match to watch, this is the one. I mean, I'm trying to think of some others, and there have been some great ones from over the years, but this was about as perfect of one as you can get as far as the way it was planned out and the way it finished off.
Very hard to do a three-way. And, boy, did they do a three-way. So, just a fantastic match right there.
And I'm not putting these over like Angle, you know, just say Angle Jericho and, you know, Benoit or something like that. But for what it was just about perfect.
The undercard of the show, I didn't get a chance to watch the first couple of matches. I did, in fact, miss a match that involved Strongman, Akebono, and Bob Sapp all together in the same ring. Do I need to go back and watch this?
No. No, well, yeah, you know what, because it wasn't that long. So since you've already ordered it anyway and sent the money, you might as well watch it just to see Bob Sapp and Strongman and Nakanishi, who is not a small man, and just all of these men in the ring, and the fact that MVP is there, too, just looking completely, you know, just like he shouldn't be there. Actually, maybe he should be there with that Rogues Gallery guys who was in that match. It was worth it just for that.
If, for example, Okada ended up going to WWE, having watched a lot of his New Japan stuff, and having watched how WWE uses their outsiders, so to speak, your Mysticos, for example, how do you see this going?
Well, Naofumi Yamamoto, who's Yoshitatsu, who was one of New Japan's rising stars from the old administration where Choshu was running the show before Jado and Gato took over, and that's one of the reasons he decided to try his hand in WWE. I don't think he'd be brought in at that level. Would he sink to that level quickly? Who knows? But I think if they're going to bring him in, they have to do it like they did with Alberto Del Rio, you know, at least with that type of thing, with vignettes, with a splash, with some impact, and Tensai has been a complete fail. But how they booked him, who they booked him against in that first match, with Lesnar coming back and Alex Riley wasn't the guy, the match went on for too long. If they just learn from those simple little mistakes and give him a mouthpiece, because Gato has been his mouthpiece over in Japan, that's been part of his gimmick, is he's got his, you know, the mouthy little, you know, manager agent guy doing his talking for him. If you have that and you debut him with some impact and treat him seriously, he can get over because he actually can work and work in different styles, and he's got a good enough look to me. Now, is he confident? That's been one of the things this year. He's improved, you know, dramatically. He's only had really one big year, which was last year. He debuted at the Dome Show and had a really underwhelming, kind of craptastic match, which really stung people who were Japanese fans, because him coming back from Mexico and his little stint in TNA, he was supposed to be their next big guy, and it certainly didn't look like it in his first match. It's only been a year. I mean, by June, he was humming, and by the end of the year, obviously, he won the G1. The booking stuck with him. They, you know, people got behind him, and they believed in the character. And will he do that in WWE? No, he's not going to have the time to do that. So his confidence of how he views himself, and as far as not being able to be put down, because he's going to be, and there's people that are going to test him in WWE, I think that's the biggest thing. Because, again, as long as they debut him with some impact, I think the only thing that he's got as a big negative just is simply, is he ready to actually be in a WWE-type situation? To me, it's not good for his career if he goes and does that, but you know what? I'm not paying his bills either, so I don't know what kind of guaranteed money he could get out of WWE or what they could tell him that would make it worthwhile.
Now, is it true the next major title match is Tanahashi and Carl Anderson?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's the show they have coming up on February 10th, where they've already announced Devin Taguchi and Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. against Tenkoji one more time, and the return of Alex Shelley to New Japan, too, to defend the IWGP Junior Tag Titles with Kushida against Rocky Romero and Alex Kozlov. But, yeah, it's Tanahashi and Anderson, who has actually, on paper, from an outside point of view, who only remembers him teaming up with Adam Pearce, you know, you can't understand it, but he's actually made dramatic, increases as far as looking good in New Japan over the last couple of years. He's really come into his own, and people have gotten behind him. Nobody expects him to win the title. This is going to be a lot like the Yujiro match Tanahashi had in November. Nobody's expecting him to win the title or anything like that. But the fans are actually behind him, and it should actually be a really good match. Is it one that a lot of people are going to pay for, you know, on iPay-per-view? Probably not. It'll be a lot like that, you know, November show was, I think it was, that not a whole lot of people got. But with that said, you're going to have shows like this that they're running a year, and you're going to have basically placeholder shows. And the fact that they're trying to increase IWGP title defenses too, which is a rarity in Japan. Sometimes you'd only get 3 or 4 a year. Now they're trying to have, you know, 6, 7, 8 of them. You're going to have matches like this.
Now, he did, Anderson did just, he was on the losing end here on this show. So what is the explanation behind this booking?
Well, with Anderson, it's just very simply, they needed something for Carl Anderson and Hirooki Goto to do. Goto was coming off a title loss, even though, again, he looked very good and has been looking very good. And people have, you know, are firmly behind him. He was one of those guys that was shaky. As far as all these other guys in New Japan, would he get lost in the shuffle? And he hasn't been. But the booking was very simply, Goto took the fall, so it doesn't hurt Anderson at all. And Anderson can go on and get the title shot again, just because there's, not that there's nobody out there, but it just kind of makes logical sense that Carl Anderson had a really good year. And again, he's just the guy for right now who's going to get the title shot.
And speaking of, if you haven't seen him in a while, Lance Archer teamed with Harry Boy Smith in that match, and a strong team.
Yeah, along with Taka Mikanoshu, they've kind of carved out a little niche. It's kind of funny that Archer, one of the things New Japan did this year was have a lot more production to ring entrances and things like that, and it really spiced up the show a lot, especially when you've seen the ones in the past. It added a lot more flair and personality to it, but Lance Archer,
especially Suzuki.
Well, yeah, absolutely. With the old '80s pop singer singing for him, that was actually great. But Archer is shown on the screen. They show a shot of outside of a man on a motorcycle in a sparkly red mask and a hood on, and then they show, you know, the thing pulling into the arena, and as they show it backstage, all of a sudden he comes out of the side, and it's like, you know, this was the guy playing air guitar as Lance Hoyt in TNA, and and that little stint, I think he had in ECW, too. I can't even remember his name there, but what they've been able to do with him, and with a lot of foreigners, with Carl Anderson, with Prince Devitt to a different degree, with some of the other guys who have gone over there, it just shows what a little creativity and being in the right place at the right time can do.
You don't think Kato was creative?
You know what? I like the Green Hornet TV show that I used to watch in replays, and I love Bruce Lee. And if he was played as that kind of character, would have actually been great. He could have, like, you know, exposed some personality behind that mask. But instead, he was tied up and whipped by, who was it? The Truth, or not The Truth, who, the Pope.
The Pope!
The Pope beat him down.
Whatever happened to the Pope?
Mm.
He was back at college.
What happened to the Pope?
I think he's going to school. Trying to
get on you, Elijah Burke.
Work his way out of being in TNA. I don't know. All right, everybody, that is the New Japan iPay-per-view report. It is available on Ustream right now. So head up there and check it out. You can also go to Facebook.com and look for New Japan Official in English. And there will be a link to the show as well. $35 worth your money. So head up there and check that out. When we get back, we got a lot of WWE and TNA news to talk about. So we'll get into that in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're about to move on, but we only got 2 minutes here, and Sempervivi guilted me into making sure to mention Togi Makabe and Katsuyori Shibata, who had a fight at the show. That's the best way to describe it. Different from virtually everything else on the show. And it was a very good match. I was not blown away by it, but it was a very good match.
Yeah, I was actually wondering what your thoughts were on it, just because of not being, you know, following it as heavy as I have. And it's, you know, Makabe Shibata came back with Sakuraba, a former New Japan wrestler who went to do shoot fighting, and now he's back, at least for temporarily. And he and Makabe have been feuding, and they've just been fighting, and they beat the crap out of each other. And again, you know, a great grudge match for what it was. I gave it 3.5 stars. I mean, it was just really good, and it was just two guys. Again, you know, everybody had their place on this show, and each one of the matches featured something different. And what this one was just two guys from two styles who don't like each other at all, and there's some you know, good shoot aspects into that, too, and they just beat the living tar out of each other. And they left, again, enough of it open where if they wanted to come back to it, they absolutely could. And if they don't, it was a very impressive six-month storyline arc with Sakuraba and Shibata that, again, it may not have been planned. This may have been just the New Japan president throwing a wrench into the works. There's been reports he didn't tell the bookers about it. But the bookers did a hell of a job in saving that thing, if that's the case, and just doing a good job leading up to what was a great show.
I thought it was a good match. I love the Sakuraba match a lot more. I like incorporating a different style into New Japan as opposed to the style of, we don't like fake pro wrestling, so we're not going to cooperate. But they managed to make it work, but it was still kind of, it was interesting to watch. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, on we go to Raw and the Royal Rumble and everything else. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every Sunday by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794 and 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I just had to get all those out there, Mike.
As well you should. People should be able to hear us on stations like that and on TuneIn.
And TuneIn Radio, the TuneIn Radio app. All right, let's get into the show here. Enough of this jibber-jabber. Raw is tomorrow. And the last
jibber-jabber.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, Raw has been, I don't want to say a nothing show. I enjoyed the Christmas Eve show. And the New Year's Eve show had the best line of 2012 when Paul Heyman called Vince McMahon a flesh-peddling promoter. But overall, nobody watched these shows. And I was going to say that ends tomorrow, but I guess there's a BCS championship game. I may have screwed that up, but you get the gist. That is going to be watched by a lot of people. And Raw could still get slaughtered. They're trying to avoid that with the return of The Rock and a CM Punk versus Ryback TLC match. And I'm sure a lot of other stuff as well. And Mike, what is your prediction for the rating of this show? Is it going to be above or below a 2.5?
I think it's going to be above a 2.5, but I think it will be a general disappointment just because, like most other people, I'll be watching the national championship game, and there'll be people flicking back and forth, and obviously when The Rock's on, it's definitely going to spike. You know, the first Punk's match, I believe that's, you know, the TLC, that it's going to spike there as well. But realistically, it's, again, with other stuff going on, with Raw not being a must-see show, and the fact that Notre Dame-Alabama game is going to be absolutely huge, it's probably not going to do too epically much. And look, there's precedent for this too, even though it's a different year. They threw everything at the wall last year in the last 2 years, and they couldn't get above a 3-1 a lot of the time, so we'll see.
Oh my God, if they got a 3-1, whew, that'd be astonishing. We're going to talk about that show and the road to the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of stuff to talk about today. Raw tomorrow. It's a big show, The Return of The Rock. As I noted at the beginning of the program, I am here staring at a picture of Kane along with Penn and Teller. No. As noted at the beginning of the show, I am, though. The Rock is returning for a number of shows, including Raws, SmackDowns, pay-per-views. He'll be doing more dates, significantly more dates this year than last year, which obviously strongly suggests that he is going to leave the Royal Rumble as the new WWE champion, beating CM Punk. Your thoughts, Mike, first off, we got a lot to discuss. How do you book TLC with Punk and Ryback tomorrow?
With lots of plunder and run-ins and things like that. I mean, honestly, in fact, I think if you have some sort of interference like that where people groan because it's the Shield coming out again or something like that, and then you have The Rock to come out and clean up things, and him and Ryback clean the house and stand there posing at the end, again, I don't think it would soften the blow on Ryback. To me, you're going to have to give him a blow anyway. Somebody can make a drop out of that. Just because you want Punk. Nobody can give me a good enough reason why it wouldn't be Punk and Rock. Why they would go and have Ryback win. It just wouldn't, unless it's just purely because nobody would see it coming. You're going to have Ryback lose in some form anyway, so you can get to Punk and Rock. And again, maybe Cena comes out and all three of them clear it at the end. I don't know. And then Rock lays out, who knows? But you'd have to me, do something like that just because Ryback can't lose clean. You're not going to have him beat Punk. So it's going to have to be some sort of, wacky ending. And I think that would be a good one that would soften the blow.
I think what you could do, if you're going to do a screw job finish, at least give people something. And so I think that if there is a giant schmoz and in the middle of it, it comes out that, in fact, CM Punk is in cahoots with The Shield and God forbid, Brad Maddox. I think if you add, Punk, Shield, Maddox, Big E Langston, the whole crew. Everybody, every heel that you can come up with, somehow in cahoots with CM Punk. Maybe not all of them. Maybe I got too many heels here. We'll take out Big E Langston, but you get enough of these guys coming in and destroying Ryback to lead to maybe John Cena running out. He gets destroyed as well, and then finally The Rock runs out at the end of the show, and the babyfaces beat up all the heels. I think you give people something like that at the end of the show. It accomplishes every conceivable purpose. You get Rock back. You can do something with Rock and Cena during that moment. You do a big reveal, which is, in fact, that Punk and The Shield are in cahoots together and they're all one group. I mean, you can give people something to make up for the fact that you didn't give them something, really, in the actual TLC match.
Yeah, absolutely. And they still left it open. Obviously, one of the better parts of last week's Raw was all of Paul E., but Paulie backstage too with kicking Maddox out of his office and still showing all over his face that there's some sort of tie-in. You could throw everything against the wall, just figuring that even though The Rock is back, you have the excuse if something doesn't go right of, well, maybe people were watching football or something like that and get back out of it. But yeah, you might as well throw everything against the wall there just because you might as well give that all to people with The Rock coming back. And again, you're having Ryback lose. And again, The Shield is probably going to make their way in again. So you need something, relatively new to happen there too. I don't think I'd use Big E Langston though. I think I just would keep him away. But, the rest of them, absolutely.
I guess Big E's busy.
Yeah, you need to figure that's the deal with Sheamus. And then, there's the split apart now, down the line. You can always tie Dolph Ziggler and AJ and Big E in together with Heyman in that group, or Big Show if you wanted to do that too. There's a lot of things you could do if you wanted to down the line, but for right now, it looks like Big E and Sheamus, and that's fine with me.
Rock beats Punk clean with the People's Elbow at the Rumble.
I'm fine with that. I mean, they've accomplished everything that I thought they should do with CM Punk. And again, it wouldn't crush my feelings if he goes into WrestleMania as the champion, too. I don't think you have to. I mean, the goal has been accomplished. I'm happy that they've gone so long with it. I'm happy they've resisted the urge to pull the belt off of him or to do something else, because it just makes this mean all the much more. And I think again, why not go in that direction, especially if you're going to have John Cena win the Rumble or something like that? I mean, I just, this is where they get their most creative and they have the best stuff going, so I'm not worried about Punk after this, no matter who he, you know, leads in and faces at WrestleMania. I think that's just it's the right thing to do, and I think people will be paying the money not only to see who wins the Royal Rumble, because most people just do that anyway, but it's also going to see the Rock win the title.
Somebody on our prediction show, which is up at WrestlingObserver.com right now, had a great booking scheme, which was that The Rock beats Punk, wins the title, ends the CM Punk year-plus-long streak. Rock goes on to WrestleMania and defends against John Cena. Cena maybe wins a Rumble, whatever the storyline is, but they do that match twice in a lifetime, they can call it. But they do the match, and John Cena beats The Rock and wins the title. Then John Cena holds the title the entire year, which I know is the entire concept of that will sicken people. Not to mention the fact that hopefully Cena can make it through the entire year without an injury, because he is a walking wounded. But let's just say in a perfect world, he goes a full year with the title. You build to next year's WrestleMania of John Cena versus CM Punk. Punk can headline a WrestleMania, his final goal before he claims he will retire. And the storyline is that if John Cena wins, he very likely is going to set the record for the longest title reign of the modern era. And Punk, who holds that record, is determined to beat John Cena and make sure that that does not happen.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I thought it was a great idea.
I mean, absolutely. It's, you know, would they do that? Who knows? Probably not, and God knows what form it would take on the way there. But, I mean, again, there's... There are a lot of things you can do. There's a ton of things you could do with CM Punk, coming out of this. Much less, forget about that, much less what his match could be at WrestleMania.
Probably going to be Punk versus The Undertaker. That appears to be the direction they're going. And we'll see how they do it. I mean, I don't know if Punk is the guy where you're really going to be able to convince fans that this is the guy who will break the streak. Maybe you can, but that appears to be the direction they're going. This could always change. A lot of different ideas about a lot of different matches going around, and around Royal Rumble time, I don't want to say it'll be locked in stone, because there's still obviously the elimination chambers and that sort of thing that can kind of screw everything up. But I think we'll have a pretty good idea of the top matches. And we have a pretty good idea now for most of them. But a pretty decent idea of most of the top matches by the time Royal Rumble rolls around. If you watch SmackDown, they're teasing a Randy Orton versus Sheamus match. That has been suggested for WrestleMania. Possibly doing Orton versus Sheamus for the title with Orton as a heel. So that is obviously a possibility. And Big Show, perhaps against Ryback, maybe for the title, perhaps not. I guess we'd have to see who ends up with the title. It'd be difficult to do two world title matches with Sheamus and Orton and then Big Show and Ryback, so they'd have to decide which they're going to do. But those are at least some of the matches discussed, and I guess we'll find out if they end up doing Rey versus Sin Cara, which had been suggested, but if you don't do it now, I don't know when you're going to do it.
If you really want to add drama, how about Rock Undertaker?
That has been rumored. I don't know if they're going to do it. In fact, let's talk more about that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out. TuneIn Radio app. That is the TuneIn Radio app. at on your smartphone. You can download it and check it out. Sports Byline USA programming is on there. All of the great programming, as well as Wrestling Observer Live, archives of Wrestling Observer Live, and a lot of different opportunities here, a lot of different shows. So check that out. We are talking WrestleMania possibilities, and before we went to break, Mike brought up the possibility of The Rock versus The Undertaker. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, they would give you the maximum impact, and the biggest problem you have with The Undertaker is, you know, who is going to beat him? Can you give somebody a realistic, who can realistically stop the streak? And you could always come up with a story. I mean, you could come up with a story on Wade Barrett would want to do it, or why CM Punk would want to do it. But it's when would people actually get really invested in that? And obviously they would not. With The Undertaker and The Rock, you know, it's especially in New York, it's just, it would be almost too easy to do because you have The Undertaker coming back, the Battle of Legends. You know, the problem then goes, well, what do you do if would The Undertaker get the win and then win the title? And you know, because there's the other thing. If Punk loses, I mean, or if Punk wins and The Rock doesn't win, does he go into the Rumble and battle with John Cena? Or does he go into the Elimination Chamber? So, again, if he doesn't win here, I could see something like that happening with The Undertaker. And, you know, again, it would create, The Undertaker could legitimately lose to The Rock. He could legitimately break the streak. You could have, you know, the non-hardcore wrestling fan, you know, who just watches on TV could think, well, hey, you know, maybe the Rock could do it. And then the hardcore wrestling fan who pays attention to newsletters and things like that, it, you know, it would make sense if The Undertaker would lose to anybody. Why not have it be The Rock, who's the, you know, the ultimate of his generation, who, you know, made a lot of money for a lot of people. Not like The Undertaker didn't, but again, a lot of it is just fantasy booking, but it is an option they could have, and it's the biggest option they have as far as giving The Undertaker some drama.
Yeah, you could, I mean, you could theoretically put the title on the line as well. I don't really expect that just because Undertaker, I would guess if Undertaker is going to wrestle for the next 5 years, it's going to be one match per year for 5 years. He could win the title and then come back a month later and drop it to somebody. A lot of different possibilities there. But I know that has been discussed.
Well, here's one for you, even though it would be really cheap. You know, The Undertaker, if he was going to do that, wins the title, is brutally assaulted on the Raw afterwards or somehow afterwards, and then he disappears again for another year, because they've done that with him before where I think it was Nexus put him out for a while, and then you didn't see him again until the next year, and that's the excuse that they use. So you could do that and have the excuse of that's why he's going to you know, vacate the title, and then you could actually have something semi-exciting after WrestleMania, which they always tend to not have.
I think too cheap, actually.
Very cheap. Very
yeah.
cheap.
I think if you're going to put the title on him, he's got to defend it at least once. Be interesting. I mean, you could, let me think how you could do this. You could just have Rock beat Punk, and then Rock loses the title in Elimination Chamber, and then that sets up Rock and Undertaker, although, I don't know. Can you really convince people that a part-time Rock is going to be the guy to end the streak? I think the whole key to the Undertaker match is you got to put that doubt in people's heads. And we're getting to the point in Undertaker's career where there's only a couple left, you know? I think you might be able to convince fans that a new up-and-comer might be able to do it. But I don't think people see Punk like that. And obviously they don't see The Rock that way. I don't know. I mean, maybe an Undertaker match at WrestleMania is always going to do huge no matter what. But, you know, they managed to put in some doubt last year with, you know, is Shawn going to get his revenge on The Undertaker by helping Hunter break the streak, and at least you had some sort of storyline there. But I do know that Rock is, he's done interviews, he has said that he is going to have a big match at WrestleMania. He's not allowed to say who it is against, and of course that's led to a lot of people speculating about different people. Could just be he doesn't want to mention John Cena yet. But he says they've got a lot of great storylines planned from now through WrestleMania, so I guess we shall see. This is usually their, this is always their hottest period of the year. So, it's funny. Last year, when I did the prediction show, people did not have faith. There were several people that predicted that WrestleMania was going to do less than 1 million buys. And, in fact, it appears that this year's WrestleMania will very, very, very slightly end up the second biggest of all time, the 2012 version. Almost broke the record, but it's looking like it's going to be several thousand buys under the record. And this year's show may be, in fact, with the New York market, it probably will be the all-time biggest of all time. So just remember that when people are complaining about the booking in about 2 months.
Well, yeah, that's where you deal with two different sides of the coin, because from the business point of view, I mean, WWE could tank the entire rest of the year. I mean, look at some of the projects they've had in the past. They can live and eat off of WrestleMania all year long. They really could, with what it brings in dollar-wise and the whole nine yards, what it makes off pay-per-view. And the fact is, people are willing to pay for one pay-per-view a year. They prove that every year. There's more homes now with the access to do it. Because people don't buy pay-per-views throughout the year as much anymore. When it's time to pay for the big one, the Mayweather fight or the big UFC show or WWE when it comes to WrestleMania, they do that. So it's probably going to show, actually increases or at least hover around the same. I think from now on, you're probably not going to see it ever dip too dramatically low anymore, just because it is the one everybody's going to pay for. The problem is what happens, throughout the rest of the year. And unfortunately, because WWE's, been doing this the last couple of years, there's probably going to be the same case this time where, they're great. They do a lot of great thinking. They do a lot of great stuff between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And then after that, even when they're handed something, whether it be, CM Punk or the Nexus or Brock Lesnar, they just continue to kind of bumble on with it before, the next event comes, which in most cases, most years, you have to wait all the way till SummerSlam in Los Angeles for there to be another show where you really want to be separated from your money.
That reminds me, by the way, speaking of the prediction show, which remains one of my favorite shows of the year. We take people's predictions for the next year, and then we go back and look at what they predicted the year prior, and usually one miss after another. Mike, your prediction. Actually, this doesn't really count. It's kind of just a yes or no question, but is Raw going to be 3 hours by the end of 2013?
God, I hope not. No, I really don't think it will. I think by then you'll, because again, 52 weeks is a long time. It can be a long time in the TV industry. They've got to figure out a way to bow out gracefully from this. Even again, if they keep the hour under the auspices of WWE and they just try a different show, whether it be bring back Tough Enough, or have something on there that just does not tie into Raw, and it's at least a little bit separate, so it doesn't burn people out in the way that it's doing right now. And the fact that it's not getting the great ratings, again, Rock's going to spike it for a while. That'll lead them in the summertime. But, again, if things keep going the way they're going, where people are tuning out by the end of the show, and, CM Punk is not drawing good ratings. Now, I'm not saying that that's an indictment of CM Punk. I'm saying, in this case, the whole is bringing down the sum of its parts, and nobody can save it, not even, John Cena. And last year when they brought back all those guys, when it was only 2 hours and they were only doing 3-1s and it would range between a 3-0 and a 3-3, again, that should have been some cause for concern right there, and I don't know whether it was or not. But again, here, even with the false inflated, hopes, and yes, they're going to make a lot of money in the whole nine yards, but that doesn't mean things are going to be really good. And while Raw just keeps getting those low numbers, and we'll see what happens, with The Rock, and then again without The Rock, because he's not going to be there every week after WrestleMania, what's this all actually going to mean?
I think that the ratings are going to be great through WrestleMania season, January, February, March, maybe not tomorrow, but starting the week after, as soon as football ends. I think Raw ratings are going to be very good, and everyone will talk about, it's a big turnaround, as opposed to Rock's back and football's over. But I do think that after WrestleMania, we're going to see a plunge. And I think, I don't know how far it will fall. Maybe it'll only fall to the levels it's at right now. I don't know. But I think they're going to see a fall, and I don't know. I don't know. There's part of me that just thinks the year's going to end and it's still going to be 3 hours, and I'm just going to look back and be baffled. But then there's the other part of me that thinks they've got to find a way, and I don't know what the way is, because you can't just go on TV and say, this 3 hours ain't working, so we're moving to two.
Hey, they have outs.
Yeah, you can
have
do it.
A lot of outs.
I had an idea a long time ago that it's too late now, But when you had the feuding GMs of Teddy Long and actually we had three GMs. We had like Booker, Teddy Long, and Vicky, if I recall correctly. And my idea was, all right, you keep them feuding, and then you build up a storyline where Vince McMahon says, enough of this. All three of you are going to be in charge of 1 hour of Raw. And so Booker gets the first hour, let's say, Vicky gets hour two, Teddy gets hour three. And you do this for a while, there's still a lot of feuding. And so finally Vince says, all right, at such and such a pay-per-view, each of you is going to choose a representative. There's going to be a three-way match, and the losing person's GM, not only gets fired, but your hour will be eliminated. And so Booker's guy loses. Vince McMahon says, you're fired. And his first hour of Raw is history. And there's your storyline reason for getting rid of it. They have to find some way to build some interest into the whole situation, but at least you'd have some sort of storyline out. But that was my idea. Too late now. I'm sure they could still come up with something over the next 6 months or so, but maybe I'll get your idea after this, after the break as well. So let's head to a break. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're also available on Sirius XM Channel 794, as well as the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. You can always check us out at WrestlingObserver.com as well for daily news updates, show reviews, live play-by-play, and tons of radio shows. Radio shows every single solitary day, sometimes as many as 5 shows in a single day, covering every aspect of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. In fact, we'll be back tonight. Myself and Dave Meltzer, brand new Wrestling Observer Radio, only for subscribers, up at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month. $10.99 gets you full access to everything, meaning not only all of the new shows, but full access to every show we have ever done in the history of this website. That means dating back to 2005. We have thousands and thousands of hours of audio available for you right now in the archives. So sign up, check it out. I'm telling you, if you like this show, if you like Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday on Sports Byline USA, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out. We are talking ways to get out of 3 hour Raws. Mike, your idea.
Well, actually, just to play off of yours too, one of the easiest ways to do that too, booking wise, is to whoever is running SmackDown. That's the hour you cut. You either cut the 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock hour, which would be the one that, traditionally they do, or you could cut the 10 to 11 hour, and one of the ways you could do that is just, they start loading that show up with more guys from SmackDown, and Vince comes out and says, you and everybody on this show is going back to wherever you came from if, things don't pick up, and then you can cut them that way, and it would at least be a way to get everybody over there if you're going to have Vince come out and be so strong that he cuts an hour of his own programming. That could be the excuse for that, but post WrestleMania, you run into that summer season where you have what are the built-in excuses? People aren't watching TV. Kids are out of school and they're staying up late, but they're out doing things because all of that sort of stuff. You could use. You could go through the summer and then have USA debut a show that they really want to debut, and they have enough of their own original programming that draws well that they get all the ad revenue off of anyway. Where, they may want to debut a show from 10 to 11 and run it like that for a while and have Raw from 8 to 10. And then, after a month of that, maybe switch it back to 9 to 11. And then, the USA goes back into running their reruns in that spot that, again, do great ratings. I don't think they do Raw peak ratings or anything like that. But for what they cost in the whole nine yards, it doesn't. Those shows do well for USA, so there's enough built-in excuses you could use after WrestleMania season if they chose to do so, and again, I really hope they choose to do so, because you're having so many wrestling fans now who aren't watching it live. When they do watch it, they're fast-forwarding through everything. You have people saying that Main Event is the show that they actually really like to watch the most, because it's only an hour long, and basically in that hour you're getting a full and complete wrap-up of what happened on Raw anyway. So it's, you know, these are all telling signs for WWE, and more so for USA, who, again, I know it's easy programming and they're loyal to wrestling, and I thank them for that and all that stuff, but it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense for a show whose ratings have fallen since you moved it to 3 hours to keep it that way.
Well, it's interesting, several weeks ago when several cable systems, as well as the New York edition of TV Guide, all listed Raw as only being 2 hours 1 week, and it was claimed it was just a glitch, but it'd be one thing if it were a glitch that only affected one cable system, but when you're talking about cable systems, TV Guide, that's kind of weird.
It could have also been something that was pre-plugged into, that maybe they were only going to temporarily go to for 3 hours, and they had a end date in mind, like a best case scenario end date. You know, if things didn't work out,
I actually think that's what happened, because I remember at the time when they went to 3 hours, I was pretty much told it'll be a big surprise if it's still 3 hours by the end of the year.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things too, and I don't know what the week number count would have been, but if it was 13, you know, let's just say 26 weeks or something like that, well, you know, that's a traditional one in TV that they use as far as the season goes. So who knows what it could have been. Obviously, you know, it was no big deal. And, you know, it's what WWE obviously said it was in USA, where they had no plans on cutting it back.
Wonder if the idea was to only go 6 months or whatever, and then somebody decided, hey, let's just let's extend it through WrestleMania.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and again, USA is obviously comfortable and satisfied enough, and they're getting, you know, they get the ad revenue off the show anyway. You know, I don't know how much they kick in for production or anything like that, but obviously WWE foots, you know, most of the bill for that. So they could just be completely fine with this, and people could be overthinking it, and maybe they're just not all that worried about it. I just think sooner or later, again, with the shows that they have and the fact that, you know, FX is really strong, TBS is really strong, especially FX, who USA is most in competition with. I mean, they rock with their new programming, you know, every day of the week and in, you know, the prime spot. So, again, if there could be something that gives them more leverage as far as wanting to be the number one rated cable network, which does mean a lot to them, then they're probably going to have to make a move at some point.
You mentioned Main Event. On Main Event this week, Antonio Cesaro faced the Great Khali and had a perfectly fine match in which he pinned the Great Khali with the neutralizer. I was very impressed at the ease in which Antonio Cesaro hit the neutralizer, and I was also very impressed at the ease in which he got a decent match out of the Great Khali.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Khali's balance. I mean, you know, because obviously Cesaro's an incredibly strong man. That's what they wanted to prove there. And to have that visual of it was, you know, very impressive. But, you know, him, you know, Khali actually, you know, and again, he's almost immobile, so maybe it's not that big of a deal, where if you can, you know, actually hold the weight and shift the weight, you're okay, like Cesaro was. But I thought Khali held up to his end of the deal very well, including not busting out laughing when Natalya told him that you remind me of my Uncle Brett.
Another match. I know you didn't watch SmackDown, but there are a lot of good matches actually this week outside of the Tokyo Dome. SmackDown this week, I was befuddled. I don't even know what the proper word would be. I was gobsmacked to hear that The Miz was going to face Heath Slater in a match that I was initially told went on, quote, forever. And I was like, oh my God, this I gotta see. The Miz and Heath Slater in a long, long TV match. And turns out, it's a good match. It's like the best Miz match I guess probably since the match with Dolph Ziggler. But if you take that one out of the equation, this was the best Miz match in a long, long, long time. He looked like a perfectly acceptable upper card babyface. He worked well. They had a good match. It was like a, if you ever watch Classics on Demand, one of those old MSG house shows from like 1985, where two guys just go out there and they wrestle for 20 minutes, just exchanging holds. And then at the end, Miz just made his comeback and won. No reversals, nothing. Just made his comeback, hit his move, won. And it was good. It was a good match. So, way to go, Miz.
Well, I think, and also, I think that would be way to go Heath Slater, who a lot of people have always liked. And again, I never looked at Heath Slater more than making it past the mid-card, and I think he could have a very long and fruitful career. I'm not saying be the next wave Steve Lombardi. I'm trying to think of somebody over that. You know, maybe Barry Horowitz towards there at the end. You know, give Heath some wins once in a while, but he's there to be annoying, and he's there to make other people look good, and I'm sure that was a lot of the case, too, in a match that went on for that long. I don't get it with The Miz. I'm not a big fan of his. Obviously, the character right now should be a heel, if nothing else. But even as a heel, I'm not saying it's tough for me to take him seriously or anything like that.
But it is.
I'll say this. It's funny that, you know, they tried to shove him and Alberto Del Rio in a tag team for a little bit with how Alberto Del Rio has been on the record about how he thinks of Miz. But again, yeah, maybe it's just that old pro wrestling part of me, but it was very difficult for me to take both him and John Morrison, you know, as seriously as my, you know, professional wrestling ass-kicking champions. And I know that's, again, somebody could point out holes in, you know, somebody I liked back, you know, or something like that was something I've said in the past. But it was difficult for me with those guys where it's not as much for Dolph Ziggler, who was a really good amateur wrestler, or Alberto Del Rio, who I've seen in shoot fights and stuff like that. Not the guy from MTV who, again, I don't like those shows either, so that doesn't help. It's really hard for me to take him seriously. I don't think he's believable in his role. If he came around in another era, they'd be saying the same things about him that they said about Michael Hayes and Roddy Piper, which is, this guy shouldn't wrestle. He should just be the mouthpiece who gets beaten up every once in a while. Like, I just think, you know, to even more of a degree, it's no offense to him because he's worked really hard, and he's not the same guy he was when he started. But with that said, it's tough for me. It really is.
You know, The Miz needs, he needs to go to New Japan.
Oh, God. Why? For his own sake, no, he doesn't.
No, he does. He needs to go to the New Japan Dojo.
Ugh.
And get put through the ringer and learn what it's like to fight and get in a fight. And then he needs to work a bunch of New Japan shows. And he can be the next Lance Archer.
Maybe. You're exactly right about giving the impression that, you know, he's gotten in a fight, and again, I didn't. Maybe it's the machismo thing. I don't know. I played sports. I've been in fights, and, you know, The Miz with his talk show, it's like, why doesn't somebody just, as soon as he starts talking, punch him in the face? It's not like you're going to get in trouble for it. That's what wrestling's about. So why don't you just walk out there and punch him right in the face? Because if he would do that in everyday life, or if he's going to be a character you want to invest in, that's what would happen to a guy like that.
I think he just needs to work a little with some tough guys. They're going to
punch him in the face.
Whip him into shape. Tie him up a little bit.
Where's Bob Holly? Bring Bob Holly back.
That's actually the worst idea I can think of.
Well, if you wanted him to
different kind of beating.
Well,
he needs to go back and forth with some guys, you know? He needs to get in there with Sakuraba.
You sure? Again, knock him.
You know what I'd pay to see a Miz versus Sakuraba match? I can't even tell you how much money I'd pay for that thing.
Sakuraba would accidentally knock him out. I mean, imagine some of the things that were light strikes on Nakamura because he knows how to take them, bouncing off of Miz's. Miz gets the rosy cheeks anyway with his orange tan. Like, he always gets that. Imagine Sakuraba just leaving handprints all over him.
Yeah, I don't want to see him get knocked out or anything like that. And I should mention in that Tokyo Dome match with Sakuraba, quit hitting each other in the face so hard, you idiots. But I do think that I think that'd be a great little battle. The Miz versus Kazushi Sakuraba in an outsiders versus pro wrestling battle. I think it'd be great. You know, the Impact show also had a great women's, I think it was a tag match or a six person, I can't remember. I think it was a tag. I think it was Tara and Brooke and Gail Kim.
Mickey.
And Mickey, that's right. Yeah, that was a good match.
It really was. That and Hogan with Bully Ray and Joe Park, the whole thing with Danny Davis, those were the three redeeming values to me of Impact.
Yeah, Hogan was awesome as a dad who just flipped his lid because of who his daughter's dating, and he just went nuts. Perfectly believable. And even though his unbelievable reactions were completely believable, so I like that. All right, we're going to do a break when we come back. More Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Just a couple of minutes left here on the program. So, Mike, I know you've got a youngster. He's a young fella. But let's pretend for a moment that you've got a little girl, and she grows up and you find out she's dating Bully Ray. What kind of reaction would you have?
Probably someone along the lines of what Hulk Hogan's got. That's you got a big age separation there. You got a grimy guy in Bully Ray. I mean, remember him in ECW? Maybe yeah. Hulk Hogan saw him in ECW. He's having flashbacks of this. There was inbreeding going on. Do you remember Dances with Dudley? Dudley, all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's thinking back to that. These are things that go through a parent's mind when you're, you know, kind of shining up the shotgun and waiting for, you know, your daughter's date to come over. Those are the things that happen. I mean, what kind of hands would your daughter be in, being on the type of hands that put Mae Young through a table? Think about that.
That's right.
I mean, this is emotional stuff, and I, you know...
Well, he did protect Mae.
Well, yes, but still, he put her through a table.
He did put her through a table.
Bubba got wood.
That's right. That's
on
right.
An old lady.
I do like also that Bully has been suspended without pay, yet he's still working all the house shows.
Well, that's a good out to lead into a lawsuit from Bully Ray that gets him back, because just a scorned father cannot... you know, take me from my paychecks or make me work without pay.
I wonder what they're going to do, because they often cycle guys off television for a month. I remember after D-Von won the TV title, it was time for him to be cycled off. So he won the TV title and we didn't see him for a full month. That was awesome. So I don't see them cycling off Bully Ray, though. He's too good. So I guess we'll find out. Everybody, we are out of time. Don't forget New Japan iPay-Per-View on Ustream. It's an awesome show. Don't forget Raw tomorrow, TLC match, as well as the return of The Rock. Don't forget WrestlingObserver.com, the place to go. The place to go for pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news and audio. Subscribers, it's only $10.95 a month. There's a lot of great stuff for that, so check it out. For everybody else, we'll be back next week with a brand new show, so make sure you check it out. I want to thank everybody for listening. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.